Does truth exist?
Because you have faith, does that make this book true?
Does God exist?
So when someone says there is no truth, if you apply the claim to itself, what should you say? Is that true? They don't think Christianity's true. They're talked out of it. You know why they're talked out of it? Because they've never been talked into it.
Cross-examining skeptical and atheistic views. Welcome to Cross-Examine with Dr. Frank Turek.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just watched an excellent documentary this morning that will shock and hopefully motivate you. It's called Police State. And it will show you that the justice agencies within our government since 9/11, but especially since President Obama, have shifted their focus from Islamic terrorism to what they call domestic terrorism. And who qualifies as a domestic terrorist? Well, if you're a conservative, if you are pro-life, if you are pro-natural family, if you are concerned about gender ideology and pornography in our schools, if you are a Christian, then you may qualify as a domestic terrorist. And the writer, producer, director, and narrator of Police State is Dinesh D'Souza, who not only is a filmmaker, but he's an author, he's a speaker, he's a political commentator. He has a great podcast. I just listened to a couple of his podcasts earlier this week. He's an apologist. He's written several books, 25 books. One of them is called What's So Great About Christianity, a book from 2007, but it's evergreen. It's a book you ought to get. And another book dealing with apologetics called Life After Death, The Evidence. Dinesh, although born in India, came to America in the 1970s. He went to Dartmouth. He worked in the Reagan White House as a domestic policy analyst. He's done several movies, as I mentioned. By the way, in these movies, he's doing the work of an investigative journalist in many cases. You know, it's kind of a dead profession now. People don't tend to do that anymore, but Dinesh does. I mentioned he has a popular podcast. He's got he's a real defender of Christianity, conservative principles. And we've known one another for many years from a distance, but Dinesh, this is the first time we've had the opportunity to get together, despite the fact that we've debated some of the same people. You debated Hitchens and Shermer, and so did I. So it's great having you on. How are you?
It's a real pleasure, Frank. I did a lot of my apologetics work between 2008 and 2012. I sort of took a little bit of a respite from the political arena, and then I kind of jumped back into the political world. So I have a connection with apologetics to now, except I'm not quite as active as I used to be in that sphere. But that's when our paths, I think, first crossed.
Yes.
And so I'm thrilled to make our acquaintance again and to do the show.
Well, what motivated you to actually write, produce, direct, narrate Police State? Because it's quite a shock when you see this film. And ladies and gentlemen, it's about an hour and 50 minutes long, and you can see it at policestatefilm.net, and you ought to. policestatefilm.net. Get the family around. It's only $20 to see. It's crowdfunded. Very well done. What really prompted you to do this, Dinesh?
Well, I've been making films since 2012. I did the first one on Obama, going back 10 years ago. And I think that what happens as a filmmaker is you get better at it. You know, you get more familiar with the techniques of it. You avoid the pitfalls. And so I've become quite aware of, I had a case myself going back to 2013 involving campaign finance law. And I was trying to help a college friend of mine running for office. I exceeded the campaign finance limit. Normally, a technical violation. Obviously, I'm not a chronic lawbreaker. And normally, you get a slap on the wrist, maybe some community service. You should have known better, Dinesh. But I found the full force of the federal government coming after me. Even then, I didn't see it as a prelude to a police state. I mean, I thought to myself, listen, I made a movie about Obama. I probably have annoyed this guy, Obama. Eric Holder is his wingman, so no surprise the FBI is at my door. They're trying to use a small thing to go after me with all the power and weaponry at their disposal. So I had an experience of all this very directly. And so I kind of know what it feels like. But I didn't know then that it would be a prelude to what would happen to Carter Page, Papadopoulos, Michael Flynn, of course, now Trump, and lots of other ordinary people who, quite frankly, were not in as strong a position as me to deal with this kind of thing. Because when I found the FBI at my door, I found, there's a case, United States of America versus Dinesh D'Souza. They have unlimited resources. You suddenly realize, you need $500,000. You need a world-class attorney defending you. You need access to media yourself. So if they put out lies against you in the press, you can go on Megyn Kelly's show on Fox and hit back. So I had all those things at my disposal. So I was able to say, all right, look, I know what these guys are trying to do. They're trying to destroy my career. Just like with Trump, they're trying to make sure Trump doesn't effectively run again. He's not, president number 45 doesn't become president number 47. They always have a concrete agenda. And so my goal at that time was I got to frustrate their agenda. I'm going to go to an incarceration camp for 8 months. Who cares? I'm going to have some idiotic community service. Fine. I'm going to have some mandatory psychiatric counseling as though I'm sort of some sort of Jeffrey Dahmer. I'm going to treat that as high comedy. But they are trying to destroy my career, and I've got to make sure I don't let them do that. If my career is bigger after than it was before, then I win. Otherwise, they win. So this is how it goes. And now this kind of police state conduct that was, as I say, kind of rare, episodic in 2013 has become widespread. So that's what the film does, is it dramatizes the cases of people who have experienced it, because quite frankly, the ordinary guy has no idea what this is even like. In fact, they probably don't even think this happens in America. Until you hear the whirring of the helicopter, you feel your front door come smashing in, you see all these heavily armed guys with automatic weapons pointed at your kids' faces, you don't know that this is what happens routinely in America now. So I'm not saying we've become a full-fledged police state, but of course the theme of the movie is we are heading troublingly in that direction.
And there is a double standard, whereas it seems that only people on the right are ever prosecuted, at least in recent years. And you can see that at the presidential level, Dinesh. I mean, as you well know, and you've talked about on your podcast. By the way, where do people listen to your podcast, Dinesh? It's quite good. I was just listening to two episodes earlier today. Where can they get it?
Well, I do it 5 days a week, and it is on audio, on Apple iTunes, on Google and Spotify. And it's also on video on YouTube and Rumble. So I got about half my audience that likes to listen, in the car or they're doing something else at home. They keep the podcast in the background. You can listen to it audio. But then I've got another half that likes to watch it like a movie. They watch it video. And you can do that on Rumble. Just go to Rumble and search for my podcast and it'll come right up.
Yeah, because the one I was listening to earlier, you were talking about the well-known, although some people will deny, double standard between Trump and Biden. Trump and Biden apparently had documents that they shouldn't have had, yet only Trump appears to be being persecuted for this. Why is this, Dinesh?
Well, let's look at what happened in these cases. When you depart the presidency, you have all these papers. I mean, and we're talking about giant volumes of papers. And your job is to clear out of the White House, take your stuff and go, because there's another guy moving in a very, very short time. Typically, what happens is that this stuff is all packed up in boxes and it is relocated, generally either to the now former president's house, or just put at some center. Like if you've got the Obama Center or the Bush Center, they're like, okay, take these boxes over there. No one has gone through all the boxes. Nobody knows exactly what is in the boxes. Most of this has just been pulled together. So as it turns out, Clinton took classified documents. I don't know about Reagan. I think no one has looked that far back. Obama did. Mike Pence had classified documents. Trump had classified documents. Biden had classified documents. And Biden had classified documents like all over the place. Some are at the Penn Center, some are in his home. So this is is a pattern, quite clearly. Right. And yet Trump is the one being singled out for prosecution.
Yeah, let's pick it up right after the break. We're talking to Dinesh D'Souza. The new movie you need to see is called Police State. Go to policestatefilm.net. A lot more with Dinesh right after the break. Don't go anywhere. Is America becoming a police state, ladies and gentlemen? I know that sounds almost paranoid, but when you look at the evidence, it's hard to dispute. Maybe not the kind of police state where we got troops walking down the street, genuflecting before the leader. Not that kind of police state. It's a little bit more subtle than that, but it's documented quite well in the brand new movie. It's only been out about 6 months, called Police State, by my guest today, Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh has done great work over the years, and this is his latest. It is quite a riveting documentary. You're going to want to see it. Just go to policestatefilm.net. Just before the break, Dinesh, we were talking about this kind of double standard. Trump gets prosecuted, Biden does not. Pick it up right there.
The special prosecutor, whose name is Jack Smith, says that the Trump case is worse because Trump held on to these documents for a longer period of time. He didn't give them back when he was asked. Now, it should be noted that there's always a disagreement that happens over which documents are yours and which documents are mine. Most of these classified documents are documents prepared by Trump, signed by Trump. They're his papers. And Trump, and this is true, by the way, of any president, they have the right to declassify documents just on their own say-so. And they also have the right to keep any document that they deem to be personal as opposed to, quote, governmental. So let's say Trump sends a note to Kim Jong-un. I suppose it's an official document. Kim Jong-un is the head of a state, yet Trump wrote it, let's say on a piece of paper, signed his name. So who does it belong to? So there's a process generally of negotiation that goes on between the archives and the former president over kind of who gets to keep what, who keeps the original, who keeps a copy, that kind of thing. So this was going on, very normal business. And also the Presidential Records Act, which describes the process of negotiation, is not a criminal statute. It doesn't say you're prosecuted for keeping documents. It talks essentially about the procedures of retention. So now, on the other side, and this is something Jack Smith doesn't point out, Biden took documents going back to his time in the Senate decades ago, classified documents. Number two, when Biden was vice president and took documents, he did not have the power to declassify them. So they weren't his to keep. The vice president, unlike the president, doesn't have that kind of authority. And number three, there is not one shred of evidence that Trump benefited in any way from these documents. He wasn't like trying to sell them. He wasn't trying to use them as leverage to make money. By contrast, we find that with the Biden documents, Hunter Biden is sending lengthy, like, energy analyses of what's going on in Ukraine and Russia to potential business partners with the intention of making money. And the point is, he's clearly intimating, hey, listen, I've got access to information that you don't even have. So he is at the very least appealing to the authority of these internal classified documents. So the point being, I think on the balance, objectively, what Biden does is worse. And yet Biden is left off the hook, and Trump, on the other hand, is facing criminal prosecution. So that's just one example of the double standard of justice right in front of you.
Also, Dinesh, wasn't Biden wanting to share some of these classified documents with someone who was going to write a book for him? Did I read that?
No. Biden gave this guy the documents. And this is also very telling. The ghostwriter, as soon as he heard that a special prosecutor had been named, Robert Hur, he destroyed documents. So in other words, he tried to conceal the fact that he was in possession of the classified documents. Biden, by the way, got an $8 million advance for that book. And so he clearly wanted to give value in exchange for money. So there's nothing equivalent on the Trump side. Again, with Trump, you're talking about documents. And while people go, they were lying around his house in Mar-a-Lago, well, Trump is under presidential protection. He's got Secret Service. You can't get into Mar-a-Lago. You got to go through the Secret Service. The documents were in a storage facility, and the FBI had asked Trump to put a padlock on that storage facility, which he did. So the idea that some of these documents are like in the garage, or that was true of Biden, but that was not true of Trump.
Right near his Corvette. Now, look, friends, you're listening to this, and you might be saying, well, Trump could have been guilty. Well, maybe he is guilty of doing something improper, but so is Biden. That's the point. And nobody's going after Biden. He's being shielded. And the movie Police State doesn't just talk about this, talks about many other issues, but it does seem to point out that we have a one-sided justice system that only appears to be going after people who are traditional, say, Christians or Catholics or pro-lifers or people that the deep state doesn't really want to succeed. And there are so many instances of this in the movie, Dinesh. Why don't we start with the movie starts out with a very dramatic scene of a whole police squad, FBI agents knocking in a door of a family. I think this was basically what happened to a guy by the name of Mark Hawk, who is a Catholic pro-lifer, father of seven. Pick it up right there. What happened to Mark?
So Mark lives in the outskirts of Philadelphia, and he has made a practice as part of a ministry. These are men who go to abortion clinics, and they offer counseling outside. And Mark's view was that, listen, we don't want the pro-life issue to be simply an issue of women, as if men are not involved, if men bear no responsibility. Mm. This is the ministry. Guy's been doing it for a long time, I think 14 years. He took his kid along with him. And one of the kind of counselors at the clinic, who knows Mark and has seen him out there before, comes out and engages Mark in a kind of a fracas. That's happened before. But then starts berating the kid, like, your dad's evil. Your dad's a monster. Do you realize what your dad's doing? And so Mark Hauck becomes temporarily incensed and says, leave my kid out of it. But in the sort of heat of the moment, he pushes this guy. And the guy kind of, quote, falls back. Kind of falls down, gets up, dusts himself off, and runs into the facility. Now, no one is really hurt. The guy does file an assault claim against Mark, but he doesn't apparently take it seriously himself, because he never shows up in court when the court date comes and the judge throws the claim out, and that's the end of the matter as far as Mark realized. But then the FBI comes and raids him. Horrific raid, which we dramatize at the opening of the film. And by the way, the dramatization is based on actual footage that was taken by Mark and his wife of the raid. So we know exactly how it went down.
Well, you actually have actual footage later on in Police State. I guess this is from the FBI. You have them driving in. This really happened, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, continue, Dinesh.
So they accuse Mark Hauck of violating something called the FACE Act. Now, the FACE Act is an act that says that you cannot interfere with women who are trying to get reproductive services at a reproductive services clinic. So taken literally, what it means is, like, let's say there's a woman who's trying to get an abortion. You cannot blockade the clinic and prevent her from getting in. That would be a violation of the law, because you're interfering with what is, at that point anyway, a completely legal thing that she's doing. It may be morally reprehensible, but it is legal. And so the FACE Act offers some pretty stiff penalties for people who try to do that. Now, the FACE Act is not really applicable in Mark's case, because there were no women in the picture. No one was being led to have or not have an abortion. Mark didn't block anybody. This was a case where the counselor came out, engaged Mark in a fracas. So you would think they'd have enough judgment as to say, nah, this doesn't really work. We can't really. But no, they wanted to go after Mark. And think about this. They wanted to put him in prison for a decade. For
father of seven, Dinesh, father of seven. His seven kids are home when the FBI at 6 or 7 a.m. basically knocks down his door, and they come in, they start pointing weapons at his kids. He's just a pro-lifer, ladies and gentlemen, a Catholic pro-lifer. And the government is coming after this guy. What actually happened with his case?
Well, this is very interesting, because I'll tell you what normally happens or what happened in his case. What normally happens is that the government comes to you and they go, hey, Mark, listen, you're facing 10 years in prison. And you may think that you have a good chance of winning your case, but even let's put your chance at 70%. Okay. You want to take a 30% chance of being locked up for a decade, not seeing your kids, not seeing them grow up, destroying your relationship with your wife? Or we will agree to do a plea bargain in which you agree that you're guilty, you violated the FACE Act, you'll get prison time of 1 year, and then you can rejoin your family and resume your life. I mean, see, here's the key point, that even if you're innocent, you have every incentive to plead. And this is happening throughout our justice system. Now, Mark, to his great bravery, I have to say, and to some degree, it's an irrational bravery, Mark goes, I don't care. I'm going to trial. I didn't do anything wrong. And he goes to trial in a blue, which is to say Democratic part of Philadelphia, but he wins this case. He's unanimously acquitted. And the judge even kind of apologizes to him and says something like, you know, I'm very sorry this happened to you, Mr. Houck. So this is a case that had a happy ending. It is not typical. Most of these cases do not have a happy ending. And there are many, many American lives that have been ruined under scenarios very similar to Mark Houck.
Dinesh, is there any recourse he has to, I mean, can you sue your government? Can you say that this was a bogus prosecution from the beginning?
No, because, you can try, but mm-hmm. It's very difficult to do that because they'll say, first of all, we believe that you violated the FACE Act. We exercised our prosecutorial discretion in bringing you up on charges. And guess what? You got acquitted. So what harm has actually come to you? You're a free man. So unless you can demonstrate that your life has been ruined in some way, why are you suing us? We were merely carrying out our duty, and then the jury did its duty. So the government has many tools at its disposal to thwart citizens from getting recourse. So many times it is the citizen on the receiving end, the citizen whose life is ruined. And even if you are able to get out of it, you're left to pick up the pieces.
Now, going back to the Obama administration, Dinesh, Obama and his head of the IRS, I'm trying to think of her name right now.
Lois Lerner.
Yeah, Lois Lerner. That's right. They targeted conservative organizations. This had to be about 10 years ago. And was all this ultimately the fruit of the poison tree known as the Patriot Act?
Yes, it was a redeployment of the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act was intended, and many of us supported it at the time because to give the government the resources to track, do surveillance, and prevent foreign terrorists who intend to attack us and kill us. Interestingly, after 9/11, there were not a lot of repeat 9/11s. And I think what happened within the intelligence agencies of government is they realized that they were getting bushelfuls of cash from the Congress to, quote, fight terrorism. And yet, if they couldn't show there was any terrorism going on, they would probably have to see the pipeline of money cut off. And so they got into a very nefarious scheme, which is let's kind of stage the terrorism. Let's put up some Muslims to some schemes and then bust them and then have a press conference. And later these tactics were redeployed against conservatives.
There's more on this, and it's all in the new movie, A Police State. And we're going to tell you where you can see it right after the break. You're listening to I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, back in 2 minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're low on the FM dial looking for National Public Radio, go no further. We're actually going to tell you the truth here. You're never going to hear this on NPR. We're talking about the encroaching police state, and my guest is Dinesh D'Souza, who has done a wonderful, if you want to say, it's wonderfully produced. It's alarming, but it's wonderfully produced. It's a documentary called Police State. You can go to policestatefilm.net to actually see it, and you ought to. And I'm going to come back to Dinesh in just a minute. I want to mention this weekend I'm going to be in Slidell, Louisiana, not far from New Orleans, at Journey Fellowship Church. The services Sunday morning and then Sunday night. We'll do I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. Take your questions. The next night, Southeastern Louisiana University, 6 p.m. Central Time. All the details on our website. We'll take your questions. We'll also be live streamed. Then on the 28th, up in Grant, Michigan, a Grant community event. We'll be doing I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, taking your questions there as well. The following week, that's April 3rd, University of Buffalo, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. Again, we'll take your questions. And then Calvary Chapel Star in Idaho, Boise, Idaho, right near Boise, April 7th, Mountain Heights Calvary Chapel that night. And then Boise State University on April 8th, Monday night. That's going to be 7 p.m. Mountain Time, 9 p.m. on the East Coast. All live streamed. You want to be a part of it. Hope to see you there. Let me get back to my friend Dinesh D'Souza, who has not only written some great books, but has done some great films, the latest of which is called Police State. You need to see. And Dinesh, let's talk about these incentives that these agencies now have, since they've kind of transitioned away from Islamic terrorism and are now focusing on what they call domestic terrorism. And domestic terrorism, unfortunately for them, is anybody who pretty much is conservative. Are there financial incentives for them to kind of gen up domestic terrorism that isn't really there?
Absolutely. The terrorist threat, when as I say, when it wasn't appearing on the coming from the foreign actors, the FBI and the other intelligence agencies got really good at conning Muslim students. Very often people who had some mental problems or autism, they go up to these guys and they would say, you know, let's take a case, for example, they go up to some guy at Boston University or NYU, and the guys are a radical leftist, maybe hates America, maybe, you know, believes in jihad, but is not really up to any jihad. He's like barely getting through his classes. And so an FBI informant, typically another Muslim guy, goes up to the guy and goes, hey, listen, you've been talking about, I mean, you hate America. Why don't you join Al-Qaeda? Why don't you join ISIS? And the guy goes, I'm not going to join ISIS. I don't even know how to join ISIS. And they go, well, you can join ISIS. There's a training camp coming up in Pakistan. You should attend. And the guy goes, well, I can't attend. I don't have any money. I don't have a passport. And they go, well, listen, we can help you to get a passport. We can, you know, if you have $700, we can get you a ticket. It's just a few hundred dollars more. So what I'm getting at is they enable this guy and egg him on. And then when he shows up at JFK to board the plane to Pakistan, there are 20 FBI agents all in military outfits. They arrest the guy. The FBI director does a press conference. America's been saved from a horrible terrorism incident. Here's a soldier of ISIS. They got all this perfected in the early 2000s. It's a racket. But under Obama, they realized it doesn't have to be a foreign racket. We don't have to just confine the staged setup to Muslims. We can now start setting up our political opponents. And of course, some of the big unanswered questions of the Whitmer kidnapping, to a lesser degree, but to some degree, even January 6th, I'm not saying that the Trump rally is orchestrated, of course not, but the peculiar vulnerability of the Capitol, the almost inviting of people in, the absence of a police blocking of people getting in. And when they get in, did you ever see, if you watched, people who have watched January 6th, look that footage, did you ever see a single cop pull out a bullhorn and say, guys, none of you are authorized to be in this building. You need to leave now. No, no one ever said that. No one ever made such an announcement. And there's a reason they didn't really want people to leave, because they were walking into a trap. And we know they're walking into a trap because 3 years later, they're still going after people who came just in the general circumference, even if they stayed within the ropes, even if they didn't harm anybody, even if they didn't do any vandalism, they're facing long periods of time in prison.
Well, you have a couple of cases in Police State, and friends, you need to see this movie. You have a couple of cases. One is an older gentleman who was there at January 6th, and walked down to the Capitol, but did not go into the Capitol. And he then goes home to New York City, shows some friends of his some video footage of him around the Capitol, but not in it. And a neighbor of his rats him out as if he'd done something wrong. He really hadn't. And alerts the FBI, and they come and raid this guy, and he has a stroke in their presence. And I don't know whatever happened to the case, Dinesh. I don't recall if you gave any resolution to it in the film. Has he been to trial yet? What's happened with this guy?
So they finally never charged him, but they had already destroyed him, because this is a guy who now, because of his stroke, walks with a cane, walks with a limp. They completely wrecked his apartment. Now, unknown to them, and this is very valuable to me as a filmmaker, this guy, who's kind of a tech guy, had surveillance cameras inside his apartment.
And they didn't know about it. Yeah.
He didn't know about it. They knew that there might be surveillance on the door. A lot of people have a door camera. So you can see the FBI running up the doorway, and they put a tape over his door. Why? Yeah. Now, think about it. If what they're doing is completely legit, it's a completely lawful raid, why would they want to prevent it from being recorded on camera? But you can see them do that. And then you see the battering ram. So it's beautiful because I can sort of situate you as the viewer of this movie inside his apartment, and you can see the FBI come up the door, come through the door, smash through the place, wreck the place. And so this kind of trauma is routinely inflicted on people. By the way, they always plan these raids for early in the morning when people are discombobulated. And the other thing they try to do is they always try to pretend like they're your friend and they want you to talk to them. We have got to let Americans know that if the FBI, God forbid, ever comes to your door, do not speak to them. Their whole objective is to entrap you. They're not looking. It's not like you can explain it and clear it up and they go, okay, sorry, guy. This was a misunderstanding. We're going to go back and tell the office, not at all. Their sole purpose is to find things that you say that they can then use against you.
How did we get to this point, Dinesh, where you actually have the justice agencies within our government going after patriotic Americans as domestic terrorists? How does this happen?
It happens because of the a deep weaponization of these agencies. The agencies are supposed to be impartial. They're police agencies of government. They're supposed to be, and you know, for many of us, this has come as a shock because we were raised on movies like The Untouchables, the FBI, the good guys, they go after the mafia and so on.
Right.
But what happened is Congress passed a bunch of laws, RICO statutes, giving the government a lot of power to go after these bad guys. And some of that power was, hey, if you can't get Al Capone, hit him on a tax violation, hit him on a parking ticket. This way you can lock him up. But of course, Congress never realized that that could apply to Frank Turek and Dinesh D'Souza. You can't get him on something big, get him on a tax violation. So I think under Obama, it started under Obama, it's escalated under Biden, a redeployment of this weaponry of government. And then what happens is at the lower level, it's just bureaucratic incentives. I mean, the ordinary FBI guy isn't a villain, but what happens is they come to him and they go, listen, you know, there's a woman who's 70 years old. We want you to smash into her apartment. We want you to wrestle her to the ground. If she resists, twist her arms behind her back. If she resists, drag her down the stairs, pull her into the street, humiliate her before her neighbors. And if the guy goes, well, I don't want to do that. Why would I do that? They go, listen, don't worry about what she did. That's not your job. We'll let the courts figure all that out. But as far as you're concerned, she's a bad guy. You need to just do your job. And that's how you're going to be as seen as somebody who's a team player, who's on board, who's ready for an advancement, who's going to be able to retire with a pension. So don't be a troublemaker. And it's these ordinary incentives that cause good people to do really bad things.
You know, Dinesh, in the film Police State, you have one guy you're interviewing and he says something like, this is part of the banality of evil. Can you unpack that?
Yes, the philosopher Hannah Arendt went to Jerusalem for the Adolf Eichmann trial. Eichmann was one of the great builders of the Nazi era, along with another guy named Albert Speer. And Eichmann was accused of being a Nazi, but it came out in the trial that he wasn't really that committed of a Nazi. And so you now have a puzzle. You have a guy who's doing really evil things. He's an integral part of the Nazi regime, and yet he's not a big Heil Hitler guy. He's not a big swastika guy. It turns out that Eichmann was essentially like a guy who, he was very ambitious, and he wanted to succeed in a society. He wanted to get ahead. And so he looks around to see what's going to make me cool, what's going to get me to the attention of the higher-ups, what's going to get people to respect my talents. And so Hannah Arendt was like, wow, you know, evil here isn't being shown in the gory colors of someone goose-stepping or, you know, giving a Hitler speech. Here is just a normal guy, a normal German who is just trying to succeed in his society. And the banality refers to the kind of the ordinariness of evil. This ordinary human motives cause an ordinary guy to do extraordinarily evil things.
And researchers, friends, that have investigated people who commit genocide, 100% of them say that the average person commits it for this very reason. They're not thinking that much about it. We're just following orders. That's what happened in Nazi Germany. And so what Dinesh is saying, what we're all saying here is that we're not saying that every FBI guy is a bad guy. We're saying that some people are just trying to get along and they can't even see the big picture sometimes. They're just following along with what they're told to do. And there are incentives to find people who they say are going to be a problem for the country, because that's how budgets are made each year, ladies and gentlemen. I remember this when we were in the Navy. If they gave us so many hours to fly, Dinesh, and we didn't use them by the end of the quarter, we would go up and bore holes in the sky doing nothing to burn the hours up, because we needed to make sure that when the appropriation came down for the next year, we weren't cut. That's the kind of mentality that goes on in the government. It's all about making sure you can follow the money and keep your agency or your organization funded. And sometimes that requires you to actually do stupid things to keep the money flowing.
Well, here's a really stupid thing. We're coming to the end of the...
Yeah, hold the thought, Dinesh. We're going to talk a lot more with Dinesh D'Souza. His podcast, you ought to avail yourselves of. Just look up Dinesh D'Souza. You will find it. And if you want to see this movie, and I know you do, you're going to want to go to policestatefilm.net. Policestatefilm.net. Trust me. See it. Welcome back to I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist with me, Frank Turek, on the American Family Radio Network website, crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined with a D on the end of it, .org. We're talking today to filmmaker, author, speaker, apologist, Dinesh D'Souza, who has a new movie out. It's only been out about 6 months. It's evergreen. It's called Police State. And if you go to policestatefilm.net, you will see it. It will shock you, but awaken you to some of the problems that our government is actually causing for average, everyday, mostly conservative Americans. And what we can do about it, we'll get to in this segment. But just before the break, Dinesh, you're about to tell us a little bit more about this issue. Go ahead. Unpack what you were about to say before we hit the break.
I was about to point out that after January 6th, the Department of Homeland Security went to the airlines and said, give us the manifests of everybody who flew into Washington, D.C. on or about that time. So not just on January 6th, but let's just say January 3rd through January 7th. Give us the names of everybody. Now, this is not the names of people who went to the Capitol. It's not the names of the people who went to the Trump rally. It's people who went to DC for any reason. So you could have gone for a business conference. You could have been a 14-year-old kid rejoining your dad for the weekend. Doesn't matter. They put all these people on a terror watch list. And they are on a terror watch list now, as we speak, 3.5 years later. So a squadron of federal air marshals have been deployed to follow these people wherever they go. So let's talk about that same kid who now maybe his dad now moved to Charlotte and he goes every weekend to Charlotte. A federal marshal is boarding the plane secretly while this guy is flying to, quote, watch this potential domestic terrorist. And now you may ask, doesn't the marshal know this is insane? Yes. Why are they doing it? Because, quote, it's my job. I've been told to do it. This is the way that the TSA and the Department of Homeland Security can go to Congress and say, we are following thousands of potential domestic terrorists all across the country, and we need massive appropriations to be able to do it. So the whole thing from start to finish is a racket. It's a racket because if you efficiently wanted to go after terrorists, you would narrow your search to people who actually pose that risk. But the fact that you know that you've got all kinds of people who really are not terrorists, they pose no threat to the country, and yet you are deploying resources to follow them and go after and go with them, and then it doesn't even stop there. The kid goes to see his dad. The dad brings along a friend to lunch. They all talk together, but they don't know what they're talking about. Put that guy on a list, because after all, he could be part of some cell that these guys are all part of. So this stuff never ends. And it is also, by the way, a defining characteristic of unfree societies, because this sort of notion of treating the citizens of the country as enemies of the state and deploying the weaponry of the state to go after them. Again, we're not there yet, but I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, we've at least reached the halfway point.
You also see in this film, Police State, ladies and gentlemen, about what's going on the southern border. One lady you interview there, Dinesh, talks about 85,000 children are missing. These are children that have been trafficked, children many of whom have been sexually abused, children who have been given to adults who we have no idea whether they're relatives or not. And this is going on under the Biden administration.
The Biden administration wants an open border. They want an open border because they want to transform the sort of demographic makeup of the United States. They know that if they can let millions of people in over time, those guys will get amnesty. They can have kids here who will become citizens. They're counted for the purposes of congressional appropriations and so on. There are all kinds of political motives. Now, they know, the government does, the Biden administration does, that you can't have this massive operation of people, by the way, not coming all from Mexico, Central America, South America, India, China, Syria, all over the place. They all have to get to the southern border. So there's a massive international operation, a convoy operation, you can call it, to bring them there. It involves NGOs or non-governmental organizations. It involves the cartels. There's a massive amounts of corruption. A lot of times, adult males will show up with a small kid at the border to pretend like it's a family member. So it's like, humanitarian reasons, you got to let us through. This poor kid needs medical attention or whatever. So the kids are pawns. Now, a lot of them are brought over here. They don't know what to do with them. They're sold into sex trafficking networks. The sad part is that the government knows exactly what is happening, but they have an averted gaze. They look away from it. Why? There's an old saying under socialism that if you want to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs. And the point being that if you want to get to the sort of the progressive society, the earthly utopia, you might have to kill some people. You might have to traffic some people. You might have to ruin some people's lives, but it's worth it because our goal is worthwhile. So the Biden administration, in the interest of pursuing what they see as the worthwhile goal of establishing a one-party state, establishing the Democrats as the majority party, which, by the way, they were for much of the 20th century, they think it's okay to have this trafficking operation. They're just going to pretend it doesn't exist.
Ladies and gentlemen, according to Romans 13 in Common Sense, the government is supposed to protect its innocent citizens from evil. When the government begins to do evil, we have a big problem, and that's tragically what Police State will show you. You need to see the film. The show, I mean, the website is policestatefilm.net. Well worth seeing. What could be done about this, Dinesh? I know you're involved in some other things. Obviously, we want people to vote and vote biblically. But you're also part of a new network that can help people do business with like-minded people. Why are we doing business with people that are going to use the money we're giving them against us? It's called Red Referral Network. I think it's such a good idea that we're going to support it here at Cross Examine. Tell us about that, Dinesh.
Yeah, the website is redreferralnetwork.com. Very simple, redreferralnetwork.com. And the idea is really brilliant because normally when you're facing institutions like, look, the media is so biased and corrupted, or academia, the solution is not easy because it's very difficult to take back these institutions that are now tilted one way in such a dramatic fashion. So the Red Referral Network says, look, why don't we create a network, a nationwide network that is made up of local groups of professionals, of guys who are real estate guys, building contractors, plumbers, business guys, And they get together, and they first of all, they get a chance to sort of meet each other. But the most important thing is they refer business to each other. So we're talking about people who are, quote, red meaning right of center, conservatives, conservatives, patriots, Christians, belonging to a network. And the idea is that this is a way to find people who are like-minded, which is good for sort of civic and social reasons, but it's also that, hey, if I need a real estate person, why don't I get somebody who's a believer? If I need some stuff done in my house, why don't I find a contractor who thinks like me? That way I'm not taking my money and giving it to Nike or giving it to a company that will then deploy it to destroy my values, destroy the things that I believe in. So it's a very practical, sensible way, ultimately, I think, to keep. And by the way, think of it. The Mormons do it. The Hindus do it.
Right.
Jews do it. Their idea is do business with like-minded people and keep the money in our community. And the Red Referral Network is nothing more than a sort of political application of that exact same principle.
It's kind of an extension of what Paul says, take care of your own family first and then take care of others. But if you don't take care of your family first, you're worse than an unbeliever, he says. And so we need to take care of one another, ladies and gentlemen. And by the way, Rod Dreher's book, Live Not by Lies, pointed that out. When the Iron Curtain fell on the Eastern European countries after the Nazis were booted out, they decided, a Catholic priest over there said, we got to get into small groups now and take care of one another, because if we don't get into small groups, we're not going to be able to actually endure what the Soviets are going to put down on us. And they did that and did survive. And we might as well do that now from a business perspective, because you also point out, Dinesh, in the movie Police State, how the social credit system's coming. And if you're in the Red Referral Network, that's going to give you a buffer against that. Give us just 30 seconds on the social credit system or rating system and how you can protect yourself against it.
It is a system widely used in China where if you are seen as not someone who's going to go along with the state, they can control where you do your banking. They can control your travel. So they and all of this is now greatly facilitated by modern technology.
Yes.
So whatever we can do to maintain that modicum of independence, whatever we can do to create our own rival network so that we can depend on each other instead of the state, those are probably sensible precautionary steps to take.
Friends, if you join Red Referral Network, go to redreferralnetwork.com/CEO, all caps, for crossexamined.org, CEO, and you register. It's not expensive, but if you register, a portion of that's going to go to cross-examine. So you'll not only get in this network with like-minded people, and you'll be able to do business with people that actually value what you value, and you're not going to be doing business with people that are going to use that money to tear you and Jesus and Christianity and the country down. You're going to actually also be supporting cross-examine. So go to redreferralnetwork.com/CEO, all caps, and you'll be able to join that network. And you also get training from Dinesh. Dinesh, you actually put up videos up there, don't you?
Yeah. Each week I do a sort of assessment of what's going on in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so these groups which meet locally kind of get some political and cultural content for me, and then provides the basis for discussion. So I'm a little bit, sort of the guru of the network, you guys could call me, but I'm excited about the possibilities that it represents.
Now it's just getting started, ladies and gentlemen. Get in on the ground floor, tell your friends, redreferralnetwork.com/CEO. And also see the movie Police State. Go to policestatefilm.net. It's going to help you out. Dinesh, it's been a pleasure, my friend.
My pleasure.
Dinesh D'Souza, ladies and gentlemen. Check out his podcast as well, wherever you listen to podcasts. He does one a day. Very well done. And Lord willing, friends, we will see you here next week. God bless.